This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a new poll says most Americans believe bin Laden will strike again, and the television show Survivor starts its season with teams divided by race. Joining us to discuss these topics and more from our New York Bureau, Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, and Bob Meadows. He's a writer from People Magazine. He's also there. And from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malvo. She's the president and CEO of Last Word Productions. All right, folks, now that our science course is over, my head is still spinning on that one. Let me take us to what we've seen, a CNN poll that nearly three-fourths of the respondents there believe that we will see, as we're coming up on the fifth anniversary of September 11th, another attack from Osama bin Laden. That is the belief of many of these people polled, Bob Meadows. This is not surprising, but it begs the question whether or not we will ever return to what the president liked to call normalcy.
You know, I did actually find it a little surprising, Ed, because I wonder what the other 25% of the people thought. What we just saw in London with the airplanes, that was probably an Al-Qaeda plot that happened to be thwarted. Bin Laden struck before September 11th, not necessarily in the United States, but he was responsible for a lot of terrorists and bombings overseas. So this is something that they're not going to stop. What I know that authorities believe about Al-Qaeda is that they often have these slow-developing plots that are going to that want to be huge spectacles, as well as the smaller acts of terrorism. So yeah, absolutely, they are going to strike again, and no, we will not be returning. But really, you know, this world wasn't very safe before September 11th. I think people are just more aware of it now.
Walter, what we've seen, too, is the United States catching up with the rest of the world in terms of terrorism on our grounds.
Well, I think that's the real issue. You know, in my mind, what September 11th really did was it unnerved the American public. You know, we finally realized just how vulnerable we are as a nation. Americans had pretty much settled into a real comfort zone, thinking that they would never, ever see that type of terrorism on our soil. And I think people now realize, when you begin to think about how open this country is and how much access you have in this nation, the fact that most of our borders, people just slip through without any problem, I think that's the real issue here. Whether or not bin Laden or some other factor actually attacks the United States, what's really happened is that we are now a less secure country in the minds of most Americans.
Here's what's interesting, too, in the numbers, Julianne, is that the percentage, albeit high, had dropped from the 2004 same question. 66% of the poll respondents said it was likely at that point. And even higher, of course, closer to the actual event the year of, was 76%.
And, you know, Ed, what's even more interesting than that to me is that African-American people have never experienced significant security in these United States. Even before September 11th, so many of us were always waiting for the other shoe to drop one way or another. In the wake of September 11th, Cornel West said to white America, really, welcome to the world. In other words, now you know what it feels to be like us. And indeed, we would watch these images of bombings in Israel or Bosnia or Rwanda, and it wasn't about us. It was so distant. But also the images in our own communities of drive-by shootings and other things where, you know, people don't know any security of life. And so this concept of security is one that I find at least somewhat amusing. Who has ever had the luxury of thinking security? If white America ever thought security, then we go stirring the pot in the Middle East. Not just with our invasion of Iraq, looking for Osama, finding Saddam, but also with what we're now doing in Iran. And we literally have heightened the risks by our intemperate actions around the world that the rest of the world simply does not support us in. And so these numbers do not surprise me. I would have been interested in a racial breakdown, but I would have been even more interested in knowing who in Black America, especially post-Katrina, has ever felt secure.
Walter, it's interesting because Julianne brings up that point, and I can recall being in the barbershop talking about the attacks and a brother saying, hey, you know, you didn't have to wait to worry about someone attacking you at your job or your home. Just think back to Philadelphia and the MOVE incident. So as Julianne mm-hmm. says, African Americans have often been felt or have felt besieged.
Well, you know, historically, we've always lived under the threat of violence. That's what supported white supremacy all of these decades and centuries. So I think Julianne is right. But I will say, I think that even for African Americans, I think there was a shock value about 9/11, particularly if you lived in a major urban center, because the notion that in one fell swoop, you could have that many people eliminated. And I think we felt it again with Katrina. I think there's something about these cataclysmic events that sort of sends a chill down your bone, because in this country, even if you're African American, I think there was this always this sense that it will never happen here, in terms of the type of terrorism that Julianne described that's happening around the world, because we felt that we were impenetrable.
Bob, if we can continue to break that down, though, it may be a question of shock, yes, surprise, no.
No, I think everybody was surprised by September 11th. I think there was surprise to the government's reaction after Katrina, because people, you know, you thought that the government, you hoped that the government had its act together a bit better than it performed, a lot better actually than it performed after Katrina, and to see that on TV, yeah, that was completely shocking, as you say, to everybody.
All right,
you know,
real quick, Julianne, clearly we've been going to a few more Daishiki meetings than they have, but go ahead.
You know, in my book, The Paradox of Loyalty, a young woman did an essay where she interviewed an older black woman, a young black woman about this. And the older sister kept saying, you know, we knew this was coming, but when? My mom said, she said, you know, not saying it should have happened, but what took so long? The hubris that the United States had shown in the rest of the world. We, you know, baby boomers and Gen Xers may not have seen it, but older black people were saying the world is not going to put up with this. So, obviously, people are inconvenienced. Obviously, no one saw the world, the World Trade Center.
Yeah, no one thought the magnitude, but no one was surprised. Well, no,
exactly.
I shouldn't say no one, but
well,
there were people,
people
who were not surprised with the attack.
People were sitting there saying, this was coming. This was coming. Yeah. We were just wondering when it was coming.
All right, let's turn our attention to another study. This done by a Minnesota-based life insurance company contracted to find out. And Julianne, let me start with you. Put your economist hat on for me. This of women. 90% of women said that they felt financially insecure. And this was even 46% of women overall, and 48%, and here's the surprising part to me, 48% of those with an annual income of $100,000 or more felt insecure. Almost half of the respondents were troubled tremendously by the fear that they could potentially become a bag lady. This is the language they use, mm-hmm. at any time.
The bag lady myth is a big one for women around financial planning issues, because women don't feel they know enough about money. Women, especially of a certain generation, were taught that, you know, the sky was going to come take care of them, whatever. But they were taught that, and so therefore they didn't learn. Many married women don't know what their husband's total assets are. Many married couples squirrel money away from each other. Women also tend to be the ones who are caretakers. When you look at the data on who takes care of elderly parents or these, you know, what do they call them, boomerang children who come back home at age 25 to stay, it's women who are putting the resources into that. So many women fear, I'll give so much, there'll be nothing left for me. Also, rising life expectancy and the fact that if you look at poverty rates among women over age 65, they're nearly double those of men. So these are reasonable, well, they're not reasonable fears, but they're fears that come out of fact. And what women have to do to combat those fears is really just to educate themselves about money, about investing, about saving. Many women are afraid to you know, do the risk thing. You've got these Uber guys who are on Wall Street, and you've got these women who've got their money tucked away somewhere making 1%.
Though, Bob, what we did see in this study is women have been listening to their mamas, grandmamas, and aunties, as they are twice as likely as men to have a secret stash on the side, just in case those men ain't acting right.
Well, yeah, I've heard about that, and that was... Well, yeah, I mean, they're twice as likely because, as all the things that Julianne pointed out, you know, men have traditionally, although, you know what, it's been so long, you know, I mean, in the black community especially, black women have been leading households for generations, so I'm not even going to go there. But yeah, black women have, or women have a stash on the side so they don't, so that the husband doesn't find out what they're spending, and also so that if they want to go out and buy a handbag, some shoes, something like that for themselves, they don't have to explain where that money came from. It's their secret stash. But I think what this poll also, I want to say, this poll also speaks to is just the uncertainty of the world today. Healthcare, jobs, Social mm-hmm. Security is failing. People know that there may not be anything left for them by the time they reach retirement age. And as Julian pointed out, poverty rates among women are so high that this is a fear that is tangible.
Walter, it was still very surprising to me to hear from women who were making $100,000 or more, which actually puts them in the top 2 or 3% of wage earners in this country, I believe, Julianne. And Walter, that was so surprising to me. It really does speak to the insecurity that women in this country feel financially.
Oh, yeah. And I think it speaks to the larger issue of gender disparities. I mean, I think part of it is when you see someone who has an annual income of, you know, 100,000 or more that feels that way, suggests that there are some other things going on and not necessarily related to income. That is a general sense of insecurity about their place in society. So I can completely understand sort of that response on the survey. But I think what's really interesting here, I think for our community, this is critically important when you look at the role that women are playing in households today, and that we need to understand this a little bit better, because when you look at who's raising, you know, many of our children, when you look at who's leading households in our community, we need to understand that part of our civil rights struggle has to be this issue of tackling these gender disparities. If not, it's Absolutely. Going to overwhelm our community.
This on the heels of a special coming on ABC this evening, the late Peter Jennings, his last special, which looks at AIDS in the black community, Out of Control, I believe is part of the title there. We see the black gay community in New York City in alliance with some New York politicians to unveil new billboards, a billboard campaign which hits Harlem and some of the transit area in New York, which is reminding African Americans that gays are a big part, a large part of the black population. There is this sense now from black gays of the need to fight back and be recognized, Walter Fields.
I can't tell you how important this is. I mean, I've lost three college friends and fraternity brothers to AIDS, my best friend 15 years ago. And I think part of the challenge in the black community is that we need to have an open conversation about this, because if not, it will always be discussed in the back room. So I applaud this effort, because I think, you know, it's a human rights issue in my mind. I think we've got to get to the point to understand that, you know, whatever your sense of what is natural may be, the fact of the matter is that we have an incredible diversity of humanity in our ethnic group, and that we need to embrace all of it and not make people feel as though they have to live in such a way that they can't be who they are and fulfill, you know, their promise.
Bob, there is this push by these groups to suggest that what they also want to do is get away from what has been tagged by the media as this down-low mentality, homosexuals trying to lead a heterosexual life and endangering not only themselves but their family members, as well as the denial that the larger community has, in particular many of, not all, but many of the black churches that have fueled the fight against homosexuality, and many people say have continued to cause the problems we're seeing in the community.
You know, black people tend to be very socially conservative on a lot of issues, gay marriage probably being at the top of the list. And yeah, the churches often speak, you know, the pastors leading the charge against it as an unnatural act. It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, is often the saying that you hear. So this type of movement to counteract that is really it's an uphill battle, pushing a boulder and being dragged by a chain to get against that mentality that the black community has. As far as the down low phenomena, I've often wondered, you know, how big a phenomena is that? Is that just a media creation or a media hyped creation? But yeah, if you are gay, be gay. Don't hide in the closet. There's no need. You're already black. You've already got prejudice against you. You may as well just come out and take it all.
Yeah, Julianne, it's interesting to see taking this to the streets, so to speak, and actually putting it up on billboards, making people face the reality of it on a day-to-day basis in a huge way, in a very large way, literally.
Well, I think it's been an issue. If there is a war against racism, we need every soldier in that war. We need women, we need gay folks, we need every African-American person to fight in that. And we have fallen for this socially conservative hype that comes out of the Republican Party about gay marriage and abortion. Well, my line has been standardly, if you do not like gay marriage, do not marry a gay person. When they ask you, just say no, thank you, and keep on rolling. The real issue is that so many, this down low phenomenon, first of all, I think has racial overtones. When white boys do it, they don't call it the down low. So they want to make it a black thing. It's not a black thing. It's a phenomena. The stigma against gay people forces men into relationships with women to hide themselves. But that puts our communities at danger. And our community, the black community, is already at so much danger.
No, black really America really tagged that. At the down low, Julianne.
Well, yeah, but white folks, when the down low gets the front page of the New York Times, Ed, you know, what else that black people do gets a front page of the New York Times? Come on. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, that
anything
I agree with,
that
yes.
is pathological in our community, folks will try to trump it. And the down low thing is seen as something that's self-hating, et cetera. It is something. Does the name Oscar Wilde mean anything to mm-hmm. you? I mean, come on. You know, white men have done this from time immemorial, so this is not a black thing. But more importantly, I do think that our community has to come to terms with the fact, you know, as one of my colleagues said, that we are a diverse community. And we, if we let social conservatism trump our economic interests, which I think we've done far too often, we end up worse off. I mean, Jesse does this thing that's brilliant. He gets you in a room and he says, who's unemployed? And, you know, half of us raise their hands. And who needs health care? And, you know, people raise their hands. Who's in a gay marriage? And you get two hands raised. Now, maybe three people are hiding, but the fact is that this should not be the wedge that separates our community. I think, as Walter said, we need to have some open and honest conversation about this. And these billboards are a first step.
Yeah, the billboards, and we should also note the encouragement of watching the ABC special tonight that Peter Jennings put together before his untimely death. All right, Bob, appreciate it. Julianne, appreciate it. And Walter, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.